Missouri School of Journalism. Welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. The situation in Nicaragua has taken a dark turn in recent months. Student protests against the government of President Daniel Ortega began in April over a failure to contain forest fires in a nature reserve. The unrest spread to other parts of society after the government announced cuts to retirement benefits. Security forces and pro-government militias in the Central American nation have responded to the protests with violence. An estimated 300 people or more have been killed and many more arrested, in some cases tortured. President Ortega has called the protesters terrorists and, quote, criminals. But the unrest comes as Ortega has consolidated his family's hold over the government. His wife, Rosario Murillo, is also Ortega's vice president. His children have also held key posts in government and in companies close to his ruling Sandinista party. On this edition of Global Journalist, a look at the political crisis and growing violence in Nicaragua, a country that had made a lot of progress in recovering from civil war in the 1980s. We're going to bring in three people who have been following the situation there to tell us more about it. Joining us from the city of Antigua in Guatemala is Maria Martin. She's a veteran public radio journalist who, among other things, is the founding producer of NPR's Latino USA program and the founder of a media training organization called Gracias Vida. She's also been covering the crisis for NPR. Maria, welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And also with us in Millersville, Pennsylvania, is Orlando Perez. He researches Latin American politics at Millersville University, where he's also the associate dean of its College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences. Orlando, welcome back.
Hi, thank you. Nice to be here.
And joining us from Miami is Glenn Garvin. He's a reporter for the Miami Herald, who was formerly its bureau chief in the Nicaraguan capital, Managua. He's covered the country on and off for 30 years and is author of the book, quote, Everybody Had His Own Gringo, The CIA and the Contras, A History of the Nicaraguan Civil War from 1982 to 1990. Glenn, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Well, good. Let me start with you, Glenn. You were just in Nicaragua in April, shortly after the protests against President Ortega were gaining momentum. Talk to us just a little bit about the events that led to this movement against the government.
Well, I think this protest really goes back much further than April. Daniel Ortega was elected fair and square in 2006. Since then, he's governed in an increasingly undemocratic way, with emphasis on rigging the electoral machinery so that his reelection is a sure thing. And there's been a kind of simmering anger for a long time. In April, with the cuts in Social Security payments to the elderly, which were accompanied, by the way, they had to contribute more and receive less. So it was kind of a bad deal both ways as far as the elderly were concerned. You had that. You had the forest fire, which students felt the government was not very aggressive in combating. It was in a nature preserve. And I think you have to characterize these two things as kind of the straws that broke the camel's back. They were not in and of themselves anything that anybody would have unseated a government about. They came after years of steadily increasing authoritarian rule. And then, of course, the reaction in which first dozens and now hundreds of people were killed has made matters much, much worse.
Well, Maria Martin, let me turn this to you, because right in the early days of these protests, government loyalists responded to the protesters with live bullets. Among those killed was a journalist who is actually live streaming these protests. Talk to us a bit about that incident.
I want to talk about that incident, but first I want to build on what Glenn has said in terms of this process was simmering, that this unhappiness with the direction that the Sandinistas were taking, the official Sandinistas, because let's not forget that in the 2006 election and prior to that, there was a break in the Sandinista party so that there was the reform movement of the Sandinistas. Already people were saying, who were close to the Sandinistas, close to Daniel Ortega, Rosario Murillo, there's something wrong here. And among the many people who were and sectors that were unhappy with the Sandinistas was the independent press. I have done training sessions in 2011 and 2012, traveling up and down the country, working with stations in the capital, and as I said, in many places, including Bluefields, where one of the journalists that I work with was Angel Gaona, just a really lovely man who was very passionate about doing his work and about getting being out there in the community, and that's what he was doing when he was killed. He was Facebook streaming live a protest in Bluefields in the early days of the uprising, if you would, and was killed by who knows who. Right now there is a question. Many people who were there say it was a sniper, a paramilitary, but the people who have been arrested for his murder, there's some question about whether or not they are patsies, if you would, and the trial for his murder is going to be coming up soon.
So the government did respond with violence right away to these protests. But Orlando Perez, if I could just back you up a little bit, Daniel Ortega has been a major figure in Nicaraguan politics for decades. He first came to power, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was during the Carter administration, when the Sandinista rebel group that he led, a Marxist guerrilla group, overthrew a U.S.-backed dictator during the Cold War. Give us just sort of a brief synopsis of his career.
Sure. So Daniel Ortega, as well as his brother Humberto Ortega, were leading figures in the Sandinista revolution of the late 1970s that in July of 1979 toppled the Somoza dictatorship, the Somoza regime that had ruled the country since the 1950s, since the early 1950s. And Ortega was part of the junta that ruled Nicaragua early on in the 1980s, and then became president in his own right in 1984. He lost re-election in 1990 to a coalition of opposition parties led by Violeta Chamorro. Violeta Chamorro was the widow of a very prominent Nicaraguan journalist who was killed by the Somoza regime in the 1970s, whose murder really sparked the revolutionary victory in Nicaragua. And so Ortega, after his defeat in 1990, remained a very prominent leader in the Sandinista party. And as was said before, he returned to power in 2006 and has been reelected now twice since 2006.
Well, Glenn Garvin, if I could, talk to us just a bit about how Ortega's politics have changed over time. He was this Marxist rebel, but he's reemerged and is you know, no longer speaking the same anti-imperialist rhetoric that he was 30 years ago.
It's interesting. A lot of people in Nicaragua will tell you that Ortega has come to resemble the family he unseated, the Somozas. He doesn't seem to have a political ideology anymore, except the accretion of political power. It would not be fair to characterize the Ortega government right now as Marxist-Leninist. He pretty much left the business community alone. There had been, until very recently, just until the last couple of weeks, no expropriations. He was not aiding guerrilla movements in nearby countries as he did in the 1980s when he sent aid to the communist guerrillas in El Salvador. And in particular, he had been very, very, very careful not to do anything annoying to Washington. That doesn't mean they agreed with every single thing he did, but he was not governing in a way that sent tons of refugees headed north. He was not interfering in the politics of other governments. He was not confiscating properties. Just in the last couple of weeks, he has started confiscating properties, and that may turn out to be a mistake. We'll see.
This is Global Journalist. A reminder that on today's program, we're talking about the political violence in Nicaragua, where more than 300 people have been killed in the past 3 months amid large anti-government protests. We're joined by Maria Martin, who's reported on the crisis for NPR, by Orlando Perez, a political scientist who researches Central American politics at Millersville University, and by Glenn Garvin of the Miami Herald. And Maria Martin, if I could turn this to you, if we could just move forward with our narrative a little bit here. Since April, there were these large protests. The government responded with violence. What happened then in terms of how the government responded, both in terms to critical press coverage and with respect to this issue about its cuts to pensions?
Well, what I saw from here, and I haven't been on the ground there for a couple of years, so Glenn perhaps might have a better take on this, but I was seeing, and in talking to my sources in Nicaragua, was just increasing repression of these people who had come out to protest. So they had come out in marches, and then after a while, they began to build these things called tranques, barricades, made with stones to keep the government troops and the paramilitaries from coming into to certain areas, and certainly that had an impact on traffic, on the trucks and trades and buses trying to get through, in addition to the army vehicles. So this was something that the Ortega government really wanted to get rid of, the barricades, and in the last few weeks has made a major offensive. Both the police and paramilitaries to take down those barricades, and then to fight, to arrest, to hurt people will say. In Nicaragua, those people who were responsible for the protests and these barricades.
So protesters basically had used barricades to sort of seal off parts of towns from government authority, from the police. But you mentioned that there had been violence targeted at them, and you mentioned the role of paramilitaries. Orlando Perez, I was hoping you would pick up on that. Talk to us about sort of who is committing the violence. Is it Nicaragua's army? Is it security forces? If it's paramilitaries, who are they and why are they doing this?
So it seems to be that most of the violence has been committed by Sandinista youth members or Sandinista supporters that have been armed, particularly by apparently the police. And so these are essentially civilians who have been given weapons by the police and by the government, and who basically are being supported in many ways by the government. It is a very troubling situation, because it could easily get out of hand, and I think it has in many ways. What we have seen, even more troubling, is that, for example, the police and the military, the official security forces, are not doing anything to stop these paramilitary forces. And what the paramilitary forces are doing is they're undermining, really, the legitimacy of the government and the legitimacy of any of the security forces
I mean, do we know, are these militias who are shooting at protesters, are they under the control of President Ortega, or were they armed by him but are now operating independently? I mean, you say they're undermining his authority.
That is actually a very good question, and I think no one knows the exact answer to that. I would imagine that they were armed by the government in many ways to act as a force against the protesters. But I think to some extent, I would imagine that the government is now trying to figure out a way of bringing them under their control, because they could easily become a series of criminal networks that could get out of control very easily. And we've seen this in other parts of Central America before.
Well, Glenn Garvin, I'm sorry, go ahead, Maria.
If I could interrupt here for a second, I think that that's already happening, that these groups are getting out of control. And in an interview that he did with Euronews, I do believe, said that the paramilitaries were voluntary police. Before, he had said that the paramilitaries were from the right, but he has seemed to change his story in the latest interview, at least from my perspective here, and to say that they are paramilitary police, and certainly they are armed with very high caliber weapons, driving, you know, brand new Toyota Hilux vehicles. So somebody is setting them up.
Well, Glenn Garvin, give us just a snapshot of the situation right now then. There have been these rolling protests that have been met with bullets by these paramilitary groups, and in some cases it sounds like the security services. Where do things stand now between both sort of the protesters and the government, and who's sort of leading the opposition? Who speaks for them?
Well, the opposition is kind of amorphous, and it's further hard to pin down because so many of the opposition people keep themselves masked because they don't want to be picked up and disappeared. One of the most prominent of the leaders is a guy named Felix Maradiaga. Maradiaga is a little bit too young to have been involved in the events of the 1980s, the war back then. He's a Harvard-educated guy. He's been mostly involved in think tanks and what might be characterized as do-gooder non-governmental organizations. You know, charities, helping people build housing, this sort of thing. And like a lot of the people involved in the opposition now, he was, I think if he were here with us today, he would say he was somewhat anti-Ortega, but in an ordinary political way. When the government identified him as somebody who was helping bandage and get to the hospital wounded protesters, they declared him public enemy number one, said he was a gangster, said he was a narco trafficker, just a completely insane list just for a guy who is a very mild-mannered academic. And not surprisingly now, he's militantly anti-Ortega, and he seems to be pretty influential with a broad segment of the students. The students are really the ones, I think, who touched this off. Ortega has a lot of enemies in Nicaragua, but the business community, these are not people who get out and march in the streets and build barricades. It was the militants of the students, I believe, that has not created the situation, but has kept the government from merely growling and the whole thing dissolves. They've intensified it, they've kept it alive, and they're a bit of a wild card.
And it does seem like the situation is very intense now. I mean, there was just reporting a few days ago that doctors who had treated injured protesters were themselves being arrested because they are banned or not supposed to give medical treatment to those protesting the government.
That's right. And of course, once the doctors are arrested, it means nobody gets medical treatment. People in auto accidents and people with tuberculosis and things like that also are not getting medical service.
Well, just a reminder that you're tuned into Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. On today's program, we're talking about the widespread protests against Nicaragua's leftist government led by President Daniel Ortega. We're joined by Maria Martin, a reporter who's covered the protests for NPR, Orlando Perez of Millersville University, and Glenn Garvin of the Miami Herald. If you're interested in more Global Journalists, check us out online at globaljournalist.org. There you can find our archives and additional coverage of underreported international news and human rights issues. You can also like us on Facebook, where we live stream, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, or see our videocast on YouTube. Maria Martin, one of the organizations, one of the institutions that seems to have played sort of a major role in trying to negotiate an end to this conflict is the Roman Catholic Church, but the waters seem to have been muddied in recent weeks in Nicaragua, in part because there have been some attacks on churches. Tell us just a little bit about the role of the church in this.
Well, it's a complicated role historically. At first, the Catholic Church and the Sandinistas were enemies in the first stage of their power way back in the 70s and the 80s, except for some liberation theologists within the church. And when Ortega ran, he knew he had to make friends with the church. And so he basically made a deal with the then Archbishop of Managua, Miguel Obando y Bravo, that he would carry out this very draconian anti-abortion law, and then the church would approve of his candidacy and would not make a big deal of the fact that his stepdaughter had accused him of incest. So it was.
So I'm sorry, you said Ortega had been accused of sexual assault by his stepdaughter.
Of sexual assault by his stepdaughter, yes. The daughter of his wife, Rosario Murillo, who was now in exile in Costa Rica. So the church, the official church at least, got along well with Ortega for a number of years. There is that archbishop died. There's a new archbishop, and he was seen, this archbishop and other bishops were seen as a mediating force during the first weeks of the crisis. And so they were going to mediate, and they were the mediating, the mediators during the few times that the national dialogue did meet. But now Ortega has turned, and in a big rally on the 19th of July, called them the instruments of the coup mongers, the golpistas.
So he's turned against the church as well, then, despite its efforts at mediating this.
Exactly.
But Orlando Perez, what did the protesters... Oh, I'm sorry, Maria, if we can come back to this point, but Orlando, if we could just cover quickly, what is it that the protesters want at this point? What are they seeking?
So their immediate demand is for early elections to bring up...
Because Ortega's term runs through 2021,
that's
I believe.
Right. His current term runs till 2021. Their main demand is that free and fair and competitive elections be held next year in 2019. The Ortega... initially entered the negotiations in what seemed to be a willingness to negotiate on the issue of early elections, but recently in a hardline speech that Maria has already alluded to, he basically said that early elections are unconstitutional, which is very ironic because his rise to power in the last 11 years has been through means that are hardly constitutional and, in fact, extra constitutional. So it seems that he is digging his heels and refusing to even contemplate an early election. But I think the only way out of this crisis at this point is some sort of regime transition that pushes Ortega out of power and allows for free, fair, and competitive elections.
Well, Glenn Garvin, let me ask you about the role of the United States, of the Trump administration here. What have they been saying about this? What have they done? We should point out that Nicaragua has not been a significant source of refugees coming to the southern border of the United States recently. But obviously, with this violence, there's certainly the potential that you could see large numbers of people fleeing the country.
I think Washington has mostly stayed out of this. There has been, they sanctioned two or three quasi-senior officials in the Ortega government, so those guys can no longer bring their kids to Disney World. They evacuated almost everybody in the U.S. Embassy, which that doesn't sound like much, but it is. That's kind of a
And they're warning Americans not to go to the country as well.
Right, correct? Exactly. That becomes kind of a hard punch in the nose on economics. It scares away foreign businessmen. It scares away tourism. But mostly, I think it's not just President Trump, but I think the entire U.S. government for some time now has kind of lost interest in Nicaragua. It was a debilitating political issue for both sides in Washington during the 1980s, followed by Noriega. And I think everybody in Washington in both parties would just prefer not to get sucked into it again. But in the last few weeks, Ortega has sent peasant mobs to seize property. Many, a few hundred people show up on a peanut farm and start putting up huts on the territory. The police won't tell them to leave, and pretty soon the owner has to leave because he's in danger from the squatters.
So these expropriations of land, you're saying, then may spur outsiders to play a larger role here.
A lot of the victims in this, the property owners, have been people with U.S. citizenship. They may be ethnically Nicaraguans. They may have been born in Nicaragua, but at some point they were in the United States. They have U.S. passports, and that starts to turn into a U.S. government interest.
Well, Glenn, I'm sorry, we're just out of time here. I'm going to have to stop you there. Thanks so much for joining us on this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Reynolds Journalism Institute at the Missouri School of Journalism and KBIA Mid-Missouri Public Radio. Many thanks to Maria Martin, Orlando Perez, and Glenn Garvin for joining us. Our producer this week is Rosemary Belson. Aaron Hay is audio engineer. Travis McMillan is director. For all of us at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. Thanks for tuning in.